afternoon, and welcome back. And the learning today is dedicated for a happy birthday. Mazel tov for Nechama Meira Bat Pesach, Zichrona Levracha VeRivka. Okay. And I'll just hand that over there. Okay. So, I thought it would make sense, given that we didn't meet the last two Thursdays, that we would start with a little bit of a review. Okay, so I gave you the outline of what has happened in chapters 13 and 14 on the sheet, but just to go through it with a little bit of review, some review questions. Yehonatan started the war by attacking a Plishti, right? This is after everything is settled, Shaul is now king. Shmuel, while not happy, has given his valedictory speech, slash justification of himself, slash warning of where things can go wrong. And Yonatan attacks a Plishti. Do you remember why he did that? What was that about?
He didn't say.
Radak and Abarbanel said he's trying to start a war. And Ralbag seems to say that Yonatan knows God is with him. But we don't really get much more to work with. We know that Shaul is unaware. Malvin makes that very clear. Yonatan has identified himself now as an independent person. We noted it was actually interesting that he's not even identified as the son of Shaul at that stage. That only happens as the chapter goes along. Shaul brings karbanot. Right? He brings sacrifices to God as a way to prepare for the war. Shmuel then shows up and says, excuse me, but you were supposed to wait for me. I told you back in chapter 10 that you go to Gilgal, you wait 7 days, I'm going to bring the karban. And we ask the question of whether Shmuel was really late or not. We had two different views. I'm getting a warning, by the way, on here that there's a poor connection. I don't know what yields that. Besides a poor connection, but they, in any case, either we said yes. We said either that Shaul didn't wait the full 7. Shmuel showed up on day 7, or we said that no, 7 days came and went, and possibly according to Abarbanel, there was never a 7-day limit. It was wait 7 days until I show up, with the emphasis being until I show up. It may be 7 days. It may be 70 days. Who knows? When I show up, I'll get there, and then I'll bring the karbanot. And we asked why Shaul did it, and we answered that it was because the nation was departing. Right? They were all panicked because of the invading Plishtim. There were many thousands of Plishtim, and certainly nothing like that on our end. And so the army has left Shaul. He knows also that he has to bring a karban. He has to bring a sacrifice before the battle. He does not want to make the mistake of not doing that. And also, again, Shmuel has not shown up by day 7. That's all right. Shmuel has not shown up by day 7 or on day 7. And he is punished. Shaul is punished. And Shmuel says that you're going to lose the dynasty. And we gave different explanations for why this results in losing the dynasty. I mean, in the big picture, he's bringing a karban to God. Like, how angry can you be at him? And we offered multiple suggestions. One suggestion was that a king is built into the laws of the king. The king has to listen to the instructions he's given. That was one. Second, everybody has to listen to a Navi. There's a death penalty for failing to listen to the Navi. And then we also noted that the issue is that he holds a leadership position. And as we saw with Eli, and as we saw with Shmuel, when you hold a leadership position, the standards are different. You're responsible for the nation. And last, we saw that this fit the idea that the mission of the king is to be a conduit for God's message. The people had wanted the king to be their man, originating law. And Hashem's response was, the king is actually going to be my agent. He's going to follow instructions from me, from the Navi. And Shaul had just ruined that. So Shaul brought the karbanot. Shmuel gave him a very hard time, and then Shmuel disappears.
That's like a power struggle.
It's not a power struggle, because a power struggle suggests that there are two sides, each wanting power. Shmuel has no desire for it. The evidence of that is the fact that he says to him, God's going to choose somebody else as king. He doesn't say, now I'm in charge. Halbertal, who we quoted at the time, saw it as a power struggle. But there's no one on the other side. So that's why I don't read it that way. In fact, Shmuel actually defends Shaul to God. We'll see that in the next parak when Shaul has his next problem. Yonatan and his aide launch a successful sneak attack on the Plishti, on a Plishti outpost. We don't really know why he does it. Abarbanel / Malvim say it's Ruach HaKodesh. God inspires him. Okay. He, again, does not tell Shaul. And along the way, he does this thing, this somewhat nichushi thing, right, where he says, in the event that the Plishtim see us and the Plishtim say, come on up, then that's a sign that we can attack them and we'll be successful. If they don't say that, then maybe we should call this thing off. And we asked, the Gemara views Yonatan's statement as a model of nichush. So if that's so, nichush is prohibited. Reading omens and signs like that is prohibited. Why was this okay? And we gave multiple answers, right? One answer was that he didn't rely on the sign. He was going to attack anyway. This was just about bolstering their spirits. Another answer was that he was doing it based on a practical point. The concern with nichush, of reading omens, is that it could lead to idolatry. However, here, he was just saying, if they say this to us, that's a good sign for us, which it is, because it says that they have some level of fear and insecurity about us, that they need to hold the high ground and call us to ascend, as opposed to, if they're very confident in their strength, then I wouldn't be so quick to attack. And then the other answer that we gave, which to me seemed the most sensible answer out of the bunch, was that he invoked God. The whole issue of Nichush is it leads to idolatry. That's the general assumption. It's not going to lead to idolatry if he says, God, this is what I would like to have happen. It's all part of a prayer to God. He's asking Hashem for things. We do that all the time. So Yonatan does this attack. He is successful. Shaul sees what's going on, the tumult in the camp of the Plishtim, and he rallies the people to join the battle. This is the beginning of chapter 14. Shaul starts to ask the Urim Vetumim, right, to inquire of God, should we go? And then he says, you know what, this moment doesn't just show up any time. We better take advantage of the moment. As Sophia Dacha, he says, We're just going to go ahead with the battle. And we saw the Medrash in Vayikra Rabba that criticizes Shaul for not consulting the Urim Betumim. And again, that's another piece in this chain of concerns about the king not demonstrating loyalty to God. Right? That's so Shaul is criticized in the Medrash for that. Shaul then says, for the nation, we are going to take an oath. Everybody fasts for this battle. And we asked, why did Shaul take that oath to have everybody fast? What was the reason?
One of the reasons was tshuva.
So one answer was kapara, an element of atonement. The dominant answer, though, was that it's...
consecration.
No, that it's practical. We're not consecrating anything, meaning they can eat from the spoils later.
Concentrating.
Yeah. Difference. Okay, yes. Concentrating, right, is the other explanation. That it's a practical step to avoid distraction.
It's a practical step to send the people starving into battle.
Well, that's the weakness. but the idea is that you avoid distraction. That seems to be why...
the whole time.
Yes.
Also, it might give them incentive to win a little bit faster, so the faster they win.
Maybe.
Faster they can eat.
I hear that. So the thing that Shaul did not do was display worry for Yehonatan. Meaning, he took a census when he saw what had happened in the Plishti camp, and he said, what is going on? How did this happen? And they said, well, Yehonatan and his armor bearer are missing. And it doesn't, take some major genius to realize that it must be Yehonatan who did it, because remember, Yehonatan and Shaul are the only ones who actually have weapons. So he doesn't go running after Yonatan or go looking for Yonatan. And we gave two notes on that. One possibility was actually maybe that's what he wanted to ask of the Urim Vetumim when he started to ask and then he stopped. That's one possibility. But the other possibility is that he is correcting the wrongs of Eli and Shmuel, who put family ahead of the nation. Right? Eli did not, as we said back in the beginning of the book, did not take his sons out of their position in the Mishkan when they were abusing their power. Shmuel had his sons as judges, and apparently they were not as good as he was. And here, he could say, wait, I'm not doing anything. I want to know where my son is. And he says, you know what? The son's going to have to deal. The nation needs to take advantage of this opportunity to throw off the Plishtim. And that's something that continues in what we're going to see today when Yonatan goes on trial, because Yonatan doesn't know about the oath and he eats honey. We noted the significance of eating honey specifically. You know, the text goes out of its way to record not just that Yonatan ate, but to record what he ate. Why is that significant? Why is it significant that he ate honey specifically?
Food.
Right, so one possibility is because he really didn't eat anything. Like, it's this insignificant thing. It's not like he sat down and had a sandwich. It's not like he took from the spoils.
He was there.
So, yes. But the other possibility is also because it shows the prince enjoying a delicacy, which is part of a narrative that Shaul may not want to support.
But it's also something that was readily available.
Right, which we talked about. But
you didn't seek it out.
Right, but the point is that the idea of the image of the prince having a snack while everybody is fighting is not a good image. And that may feed into, no pun intended, the need to carry out justice against Yonatan, lest Shaul be seen. Remember, this is the early days of monarchy. Right? This isn't whoever they are, Harry and Meghan, saying we no longer want to be part of the royal thing. We're going to support ourselves. I can't turn on the radio without hearing about these people. You have a war going with Iran. I'm like, why? Anyway. But that's the image for him, right? This is the early days of the monarchy, and he has the nation at war, and the prince is eating honey. Maybe that feeds into his need to carry out justice.
But how smart is he really?
I think. Hang on one second. Sorry, the question here first.
Does he have the smarts, in other words?
Yeah.
The first king, and some things he just doesn't get. Something.
You think so? What do you think he's missing?
This is his son. Could he find an idea or some way to
get him off the hook?
I think just the opposite. I think the smarts are in him not reacting that way. In other words, the history of kings in humanity, in human history, not just Jewish history, but in human history, the history of kings is that they abuse the nation for themselves and for the aggrandizement of themselves, their throne, and their family. He's thinking a step ahead and saying, I'm not going to fall into that trap. I would view that as the more sophisticated approach. Susan, you were going to say?
In Judaism, as opposed to the civil law, are you guilty if you don't know?
So that's something we have to get to today. We're not there yet. Right now we're just reviewing, but that's going to come up today.
Okay.
Yes.
It still bothers me that the juxtaposition of the sukkim here, where he comes with the honey, Vayavo ha'am el hayar v'ineilech dvash ve'ein masig yado apiv ki yare ha'am v'yonatan lo shama, but nobody goes up to say to him, hey, what are you doing? Your father just gave it. They tell him after he's eaten the honey.
Because look at the description of how he ate it. Look at the description of how he ate it.
He took it from the
that's not food, just.
Yeah.
As he's riding along, he dips the staff. Into the honey and he puts it in his mouth.
He wasn't on a horse at all, was he?
Why wouldn't you assume that he's on an animal? He's on the language.
Hill on a horse?
No, he's done with the hill. The hill was ages ago.
No, it wasn't.
They're going through a forest. No, the hill was ages ago. Hang on. He went up the hill. He routed that outpost of the Plishtim.
Yeah.
The nation saw the tumult in the Plishti camp, and the Plishtim start to flee.
Right.
And now they're described as being in a field.
Right.
They're not on the
battlefield or anything. No.
No, a field, a sadeh.
Yeah. So he's come back. No, I know he's come back, but he's come back on horseback? I don't see anything.
I didn't say anything about a horse per se. But look at the...
I don't know.
Why don't you take a look?
But in any case, he's hungry. He's just...
No, it doesn't say anything specific about riding, but whether he is riding or whether he's on foot isn't really the point. The point is that he just takes the staff, sticks it into the honey, and puts it in his mouth.
Nobody has an opportunity.
No!
Not everybody is looking at him. They're in the middle of a war.
But they see him eating, and then they tell him you're not supposed to.
Once you see him eating, you're done.
First of all, how much can you take if it's just passing by?
Correct. It's just an insignificant amount, as we said.
Yeah, he did something sweet on his tongue.
I think we're making something out of honey. In terms of it, what, there is something there, but it's the other way around, which we're going to get to, which is, shouldn't he have realized that no one's eating? It's not about them warning him. It's about, you know, you see everybody is starving because they've got to be, right? Because they haven't eaten anything. You see that there's honey everywhere and no one's touching it. You see that there are spoils everywhere. The Plishtim, you know, their animals are wandering around while the Plishtim were already killed and no one is taking anything. It's the other way around. It's not they should have warned him. It's that he should have had a little seichel and asked what's going on.
Sometimes things, if we're doing it that way, I remember once on Shivas of a Tamil shopping, and I never buy grapes without tasting one. And I took one grape, wiped it off, and popped it. What did I just do?
Okay.
So, I mean, it's like a reflex.
Okay.
You see this thing. He was even that hungry. It was just.
And you see, nobody warned you. They didn't have a chance.
All those people.
For the record, I prefer that people not taste the stuff in the store. Thanks. For the record, I'd rather you not do that. Shh, Nanette.
We can't hear you.
I'll repeat it. Don't worry about it.
I have a question about the word Shema.
Yeah.
Now, the English translation says listen.
He didn't hear.
But didn't hear.
He didn't hear it.
But is Shema also possible he didn't listen?
So, Lishmoa as a verb, the next question is that when it says Lo Shema, does that mean he didn't listen or hear, or does it mean he didn't obey? And the answer is that the verb, there isn't. In Biblical Hebrew, most often it will be Shin Mem Ayin. It will be the same word. You have the word Lakshiv also. I'm not saying it's not there. We're going to come across it in another couple of chapters. But actually, there you'll see Lakshiv used to mean to obey.
It does mean both.
Kashev is a term that's also used for that. But different word also. Shmirah is not Shmiah and is not Lakshiv. But the point, to answer your question, is that Shin Mem Ayin can mean to hear, and Shin Mem Ayin can be to obey, and it depends on context. But here it's very clear to me that it's that he hadn't heard it. Yeah, I think
there.
That's very straightforward.
So my book is wrong when it says he didn't listen.
Yeah, I don't know why they would render it as listen. I think that's just a mistake.
Well,
going back to this, the key is not, everyone's focusing on sort of the early part of it, but there's the second part of it, which is that when Yonatan hears about this oath, when they tell him, hey, your dad took this oath, no one's supposed to eat, Yonatan's reaction is a critical reaction. He says, what kind of idea was that? He says, that's a terrible idea. You guys are fighting a war. Didn't you hear Ethi before? You're going to be weak. You're not going to be able to fight well. Why in the world did my father do that? And no one, of course, answers him, because what are they going to say? But that's going to come back to bite him, possibly, as we'll see. Last bit that we saw, the people ate meat after the battle was already over. Possibly in the evening, we had that discussion. The people eat meat and they get in trouble. And it wasn't clear what they did wrong. They were eating on of the blood, but we didn't know what that meant. And we had multiple explanations. One approach was that they brought karbanot. They brought offerings, but they did not sprinkle the blood, put the blood on the altar before they ate, which was inappropriate. That's called eating on of the blood. Another explanation from Rashi, based on the language in the text, was that they shechted the animals and the young of those animals, and you're not allowed to do that on the same day. The Torah says, "Otoved b'no lo tishchatu b'yom echad." You're not allowed to shecht the animal and its young on the same day, and that's based on the language where at one point it says they took the bakar, and then it says the ben bakar. That's Rashi's approach. Another approach was that they shechted the animal right there on the ground, and then they took the meat and they ate it, and the meat was sitting in the blood, and therefore they ended up eating blood, which is prohibited. Another explanation was that they ate near the blood. The Torah says in describing various acts of sorcery you're not supposed to engage in, lo sochlu al hadam, don't eat on of the blood, which there are various explanations, but one explanation is that the practice of idolaters was that they would slaughter some animal with some ritual, have a big bowl of blood, and everybody would sit around that bowl and they would eat. Not necessarily eating from the blood, but eating around the bowl. And the concern here is that even though they weren't doing this for idolatrous purposes, nonetheless, that's what it looked like. They shafted, they drained out the blood in some bowl, and they sat right there eating, and that was the objection. And then the last idea that Etty had said, which I thought was interesting, and I was kind of surprised I hadn't seen this suggested elsewhere, was that they ate without bringing a korban, without bringing a sacrifice to God. Because the Gemara says that a person who eats before they daven is actually violating the prohibition against eating on of the blood, in the sense that you're supposed to ask God for your life, your blood, before you indulge. So a person who says, I'm going to enjoy myself, I'm going to have a nice breakfast, right? Maybe I'll read my paper, and then after that, I'm going to go daven, is backward. It's supposed to be God first, and then, you know, and then take care of your, and then take care of yourself. So maybe that's, you know, what's wrong in this. We have all these different explanations. Ricky, what were you going to say?
There was no mitzvah when they started to eat.
No, you create one.
So what could they? Where would they put the blood if there wasn't a mitzvah?
You create a mitzvah. What do you mean?
They should have created a mitzvah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, you put up a stone. That's your mizbeach. It's not, yeah. And that's what Shaul does, according to that read. So
maybe he's the only one who's...
Nope. It's a minor altar. Anybody can do it. You can do it in your backyard. Not you. Don't do that. In the times of the... No, not allowed. In the time of the Mishkan, you could. No, that's the trampoline down the block. Okay.
Okay. Can you do that?
So, no. Once the Beis HaMikdash is built, no bamot, no private altars.
But there is no business.
Correct, but once it was built, that's it. Private altars were out. We went through this a while back. You were here. Mm-hmm. The last chapter of Mishnah in Zvachim lists when private altars were allowed and when they were not allowed. Once the Beis HaMikdash was built, altars were prohibited. It's because the Torah says that once you come to Minucha and Nachala, you're not allowed to bring your own offerings. And Minucha is the Mishkan in Shiloh. Then that's gone. And then the Beis HaMikdash is Nachala. That's the portion, and once it is built, that's it. No such thing as private altars thereafter. So we asked what the message was of that story with the meat, because it seems to be out of nowhere, has nothing to do with anything. It's there, and then it's gone, and we're not going to come back to it. So what is this story about? So we suggested that, number one, it could be about Shaul's role. Shmuel seems to have abandoned the national stage at this point. He's certainly not around for the rest of this war. He's going to show up again in another couple of chapters, but right now he's not around. Shaul is put in the position of correcting a religious wrong. The people have done something wrong, and Shaul, as king, is now going to have to be the one to take charge of it. That's number one. But number two, I think, in the context of this story, it's that this demonstrates the fallout of Shaul's hasty vow. We don't like the idea of people taking vows. Vows are a bad idea, right? We have limited endorsement of a person taking a vow in a case of great need, where they're in trouble and they want to commit to God, I'm going to do X, I'm going to be better, I'm going to be better in some way, I'm going to give tzedakah, whatever it is. So then we have a limited endorsement for people doing that. But otherwise, we really don't like that idea. And so this is effectively a criticism of Shaul and a vindication of Yonatan's criticism of Shaul. You know what? He may be the king, and therefore you're bound by it, but you should know what Shaul does is actually a problem and leads to the people either eating before they bring a korban or eating before they put the blood down or eating near the blood or however, whichever version of what they did wrong you adopt, it's fundamentally a function of haste.
But later he consults the Kohanim, Shaul.
Later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
yeah,
correct. But not about this. That's going to be consulting the Urim V'Tumim.
Right.
Okay. So that brings us up to where we are now. So that was 25 minutes well spent. 24 minutes well spent. We are now up to chapter 14, sentence 36. The people have now eaten. Shaul has corrected the wrong. And and he's ready to pursue the war, and then he finds out that actually that's a bad idea. Just an introduction here. Shaul seems to know that something is up with Yonatan, even before Yonatan acknowledges his guilt. Hey, watch the text and you'll see what I mean. Shaul seems to know that something is wrong. Further, when the trial actually happens, both Shaul and Yonatan will be ready for Yonatan to die. The nation is going to say no. But that's also something to pay attention to here. So let's take a look at the first couple of psukim. Pasuk Lamed Vav, sentence 36. We're going to start slow. Vayomer Shaul. Shaul said, Nerda acharei Filishtim laila, v'navoza vahem ador aboker. Let's go attack the Filishtim tonight. We are going to despoil them before morning. Notice, by the way, change in terrain. Nerda, let us descend. Right before, the Filishtim occupied the heights. Now, we are going to go down to the Plishtim. Velo nash'er bahem ish. We ain't going to leave anybody alive. Vayomaro, and the nation said, Ra ra, kol ato beinecha asei. You bet, whatever is good in your eyes, let's do it. Vayomer ha-kohen, and the kohen initiates, saying, not so fast. Nikrava lo mahalokim. Let's consult with God. Change of direction, so much so that you get this piska b'emtza pasuk here. Those who have a text that shows you paragraph breaks in the original text, you see that the verse pauses because it's a change of direction. Right? The people are ready to go. Everybody's ready to go to war. And suddenly this guy says, wait, stop, stop, we got to consult. And what do they do? Sentence 37. Vayish'al Shaul Be'elokim. Shaul asks of God the inquiry really that he wanted to make in the first place. Ha'ered acharei Filishtim. Should I go after the Filishtim? Hasitneim biyad Yisrael. Will you give them into the hands of Israel? V'lo anahu bayomahu. There's no answer. When you don't get an answer, that's really bad, right? God read your WhatsApp, right? He knows full well that you sent him a message. Sorry? This is the Urim Batumin.
That's the thing, you know, he does the text, but he's not...
Yeah, no, the check mark turned blue. God knows that you sent him a message, but he's not answering.
Doesn't that imply a negative answer?
Yes, that is exactly what it implies. Shaul is ready to pursue this battle. Malvim says he thinks this is going to be easy and therefore he doesn't need to even ask. It's the Kohen who says, I think we should actually consult. Why does the Kohen want him to consult?
Because he knows something.
So that's one possibility, is that the Kohen knows Yonatan 8. Because after all, some people know. Someone told Yonatan, hey, you weren't supposed to do that. Right? So, one possibility is that the Kohen is aware, that's one.
But does he think that because Yonatan had, that they're going to lose the battle?
The Kohen thinks that yes, that could indeed, the nation took an oath.
It was command, it was Shaul's command.
But God's command was, if you take vows, you have to keep them.
Right. That's the power of
words. That's the comment.
Yonatan didn't take the vows. At those times to... consult with Hashem before going out.
So keep in mind a second possibility, which is we said before, and we mentioned it in the review, that the Midrash said Shaul was wrong for going the first time without having followed through on the consultation. So if so, what the Kohen's thinking here is, this is an opportunity for us to right that wrong. Yeah. Let's consult. The Malam adds a note, though, on a very practical level, source number one on your sheet, Chashav ki hem menitzachim behechleit. He, Shaul, thought that the Plishtim were for sure done. They're defeated. Ve'ein etzorech rak lavoz hashalal v'limchos yeser apleita. All you need to do at this point is take spoils and wipe out whoever remains. Ve'akein lo sha'al be'urim v'tumim, which is why he doesn't ask the urim v'tumim. And the Kohen feels like Shaul is overconfident. Maybe we should ask God before we venture into this. So the Kohen says, ask. Shaul asks, doesn't get a response, and now let's see what happens. Pasuk Lamed Ches. Vayomer Shaul. Shaul said, Goshu Halom, Kol Pinos Ha'am. He says, come here, all Pinos of the nation. I am curious to hear how your translations render the term Pinot Ha'am.
Polyglots. captains of the people.
All the
chiefs.
Chiefs.
Captains.
Chiefs. So that's the question here. The word pinah. So this is a discussion that I've had in various shiurim. It comes up, Alina's been in a few of those discussions already, because it came up in Nehemiah, it came up in Yeshaya, and it comes up actually in Shoftim. The word pinah often means a high stone. When the pasuk in Tehillim, Eben Masu Abanim Haitala Rosh Pinah, right? And people instinctively read that as the stone that the builders had rejected was a cornerstone. It wasn't a cornerstone. The cornerstone wouldn't be a Rosh Pinah, right? The cornerstone is at the bottom, it's the foundation. Rosh Pinah means the top stone. The Pinah is actually the high stone. Nehemiah has it when he talks about he describes the wall of the city of Yerushalayim for the city's defenses. It comes up in Chumash as well regarding the Mizbeach. The Pinah is actually the high end. And here, Pinot Ta'am means the heads of the nation, and Rashi says it. Rashi says, Reshei Kol Ama. The heads of the entire nation. So he assembles the leaders of the nation, and he says, "Udu'u uru'u." You should know. You should see. Bama haisach atasa zahayom. What was it that caused this avera? You're going to see. You're going to know. You're going to see. I'm not sure about the order of that. Du'u uru'u. I would have thought you see first, and then you know.
Referring to God not answering him.
He knows something is wrong, and he's about to tell you how he's going to find out what it was. But he wants everybody assembled to watch what he's about to do.
So. No, yes. But is he suddenly saying this because there's been no answer from Hashem?
Yes.
Yes.
Hashem has his reasons for everything. Maybe it's just not the right time for war. It doesn't necessarily have to mean that someone did something wrong.
But then he would have said
otherwise,
no.
Every single
he
time.
He would have said, no, don't forget, we're not in a time. We have to kind of be fuzzy like that. But in the times of the Urim and Thummim, you've got a response, yes or no. And if
so,
he didn't, it was...
You're better off just looking at the psukim that are following here. Because look what he says. He isn't assuming anything, but he says, we're going to find out, we're going to get to the bottom of this, if there was an Avera. Ki chai Hashem hamoshia es Yisrael. By God, he says, who rescues Israel. Ki em yeshno b'yonasan b'ni. Kimos yumas. If there's a sin in anyone, even, I don't know, my son Yonatan... Most humans. You think he doesn't know? Vein one whom he call ha'am. And nobody says anything.
He knows that his son was missing.
He knows that his son
keep in mind, we are assuming that, because we know that the sin is eating. He doesn't know anything. Either, in other words, unless he knows everything, he knows nothing. Right? Either he heard from somebody that Yonatan ate, or he doesn't know anything at all. In which case, for all he knows, there's some other Avera. Maybe somebody didn't put on film that morning. I don't know.
It's so harsh. Like, how could he be so unfair?
There must be a way to add that.
He's just all of a
nobody answers.
This is the first time they're finding out that he's
confused.
Yeah,
I think he would have said that if he thought that his son was blameless, hadn't
that's
he?
That's right. Not if he thought his son was.
Well, he could just be using,
you know,
he could
why
be an extreme. Theoretically, if he doesn't know, then he's using it. He says, I don't care who it is, even if it's my own son. It's not so crazy.
So, hold the question. Hold the question, because we have more things to ask about. Pasuk Mem, sentence 40. Yeah, Susan.
Can I ask you a question? I'm confused.
Welcome.
He never asked the other time how the Philistine lost in the first place. He doesn't ask what happened and how come they were running. And now he's suddenly thinking of Yonatan. It seems like he's unaware of everything Yonatan's been doing.
He has not had a conversation with Yonatan. He hasn't had a conversation with him. Yonatan was missing. They went out to war. They haven't met yet.
But this swear, though, doesn't he have other sons? Why does he mention Yonatan?
They went out to war with the Philistines. Weren't they already somewhat defeated from what Yonatan had done?
Yes.
Wouldn't you say, how did this happen? Who
says he met Yonatan? We don't know anything. We're not given any information. Who says that they met
each other? A whole bunch of dead bodies that Yonatan had killed before him. Wouldn't you wonder who came before you and started this?
No, he knows Yonatan was the one who routed the Plishtim to begin with, but now they spent the entire day pursuing Plishtim. I think you're skipping a point here, which I think is an important point. there are two pieces in what you're asking. Question number one is, why didn't he ask Yonatan about what had happened? And question number two is, did he ask Yonatan what had happened? Meaning, we're not told anything. You could read this text and come to the conclusion that he had not seen Yonatan yet. You could read this text and come to the conclusion that they had met and had a conversation, but the text chose not to report it to us. Either one is a legitimate read. So you can't really ask anything at that point. The text doesn't give you enough to work with. Parenthetically, for those who are available Sunday morning, I'm giving them a shiur at Midrashet Yom Rishon at Kilat Shari Torah on Bayview. It runs 10 o'clock to 11:20 is the program. I'm speaking and Rabbi Grauer is speaking, and mine will be related to this question that Susan just asked, except in terms of Moshe. I'm going to be talking about Moshe's secret identity. So it's 10 a.m. to 11:20, free program. They have refreshments. Probably we'll have a lot of refreshments because I'm hearing the weather's going to be bad, so I think refreshments proportion to people would be pretty good. So 10 o'clock to 11:20 Sunday morning at Kilat Shari Torah, 2640 Bayview. But in terms of our discussion here, take a look at Pasuk Mem. Vayomer al kol Yisrael. He said to all Israel, Atem tihyu le'ever echad. All of you Jews, stand on one side. Vani v'yonasan bini nehiye le'ever echad. And Yonatan and I are going to be on the other side. And Ricky's point, I think, is a very important point. You probably didn't hear it because there were a lot of voices. Shaul has other sons. It's not as though Yonatan is his only kid. It's not like he said, me with my sons on this side. It's me with Yonatan on this side.
And his oath.
Yeah.
He doesn't say, if any of my...
Correct.
Kill my sons, I will do this. He just specifically says Yonatan.
I mean, you could suggest, if you wanted to, that he singled out Yonatan for a different reason. Because Yonatan was the successful warrior who had started the route.
No, also he's the heir to the throne.
He's the only other one with a sword, so I think he probably is the heir to the throne. But if he wasn't, then he will be. And the people say to Shaul, yes, boss. Right? Just like they said, Atov Beinecha Aseh, about going to war. Right? Whatever is good in your eyes, go ahead and do it. Except this time the Kohen doesn't jump up and stop him. He says, okay, let's do it. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about this. First of all, Shaul assumes that whatever went wrong that day. If you look carefully at the language in Pasuk Lamitet, he said, we're going to see, Bama Haisa Chatas Hazos Hayom. Why? Because God helped them that morning. It's only now that God stopped. So he assumes that whatever is wrong happened in the course of this battle, happened at some point today.
And he also assumes that there's a correlation between God helping him, helping the nation, and his good deeds.
You bet.
And that's not necessarily the case either.
So he is absolutely taking that as a given, likely because of God's failure to respond. Failure to respond, he reads as an indictment. So this business of even Yonatan, my son, really can be read either way. We have already presented the two sides of the coin. Either he knew, or he didn't know, but just wants to show there's no favoritism. I just want to show it to you in a barbanel. Take a look at source number two. Sorry.
I have another question. If he knew, let's say you think he would, why didn't he know the tie of the book? Why did he make a public...
What do you think? Right, everybody's got to know. If, keep in mind, if Shaul knows, he knows because somebody from the nation told him. So he knows, the word is out that his son
so
broke the
oath.
Yeah. So take a look at source number two. Never mind. The example's not necessary. Take a look at source number two. Vasibaba ze etzli, huki hu gad kodem laze beseser le shaul shachal yonatan hadvash. He says, I think what's going on here is that Shaul had already been told privately that Yonatan ate. Vizel yihya al yidei ha'ish asherah ahu ochel, via the person who actually saw him eating. V'sha'amar lo, hashbe yashbe avicha, the one who told him, your father took an oath. And that was what led him to do this lottery. And he said, if Yonatan is the guilty one, thinking and knowing that in fact Yonatan was the one who was guilty. And going back to Alina's question, why do this publicly? The answer is because he wanted to show them nobody gets special privileges. The king is not going to take advantage of the of his stature. That's one explanation. And then a second one. Barbanel is never happy to bring one answer if he can bring five. So you got a second one here. But Efshar Oed Lomar, you could also say, Sheim Hayos Shalo Yadu. Even though they did not know, I believe it's a typo. I think it should probably be Shalo Yada. I think it's a typo in the text. There are typos in Abarbanel. Hina yasah davar bezeh haofen kidei sheyiru kol Yisrael shu mashveh atzmo v'yonasan v'noem kol isha katon shevi Yisrael v'nyana goral. He's simply saying, I want to show everybody that nobody is special. My son and I are equated with everybody else. And if the lot falls on him and his son, he's going to practice justice. And if it falls on the nation, then he would start to drill down among the nation. He would divide up among them. He would make sure to get down to the bottom of who the guilty party was. So that's the way to look at this.
I don't understand. Where does this luxury, this goral, come from? I can't see it in the text at all. I can see it in the translation.
Yes.
When you're talking about it, but where is it?
Right. So the assumption is that you're talking about the goral, the specifically, because if you take a look at Pasuk Mem Bet. I'm aware, but you asked a question. That's what your answer is. Vayomer Shul Hapilu Beini Uvein Yonasan Beni LaHapil, right? Like he peeled poor in Megillat Esther, is to cast a lot. And keep in mind, we already have precedent for doing this, going back to the division of the land, and before that, going back to Achan. And we also had it regarding the selection of the king. So yeah, this was a standard method that they used.
In the translation, they're already talking about it in Pasuk, I don't know what it is, 30.
Yeah, because they know, because they've read. Right, because they read ahead. Okay.
But I just
It's a good one. No, Havat Tamim is the Pasuk. We'll get there. We're not there yet.
Okay.
We're still not there yet. I understand that, but Rashi knows it because it's not that. Yes, Leona.
I just want to comment on Abarbanel's second explanation. If you go a little further on in the same parak, it just lists all the sons of Shaul.
Yes.
And if he was doing it just to show that his own royal family is not exempt from this, then he
brought
all the other sons.
Right.
So obviously there was something he knew. He knew Yonatan was missing. He knew. So maybe he's smart enough to put two and two together. He didn't know what he had done yet, what the sin was, but he knew somehow he was involved in this sin.
Right, and that's possible. But as I think it was Eti who said when I suggested that, it's also that he's the next in line to the throne. So it could be that that's why he singles him out. Yeah. It isn't proof of anything.
No.
So take a look at Pasuk Mem Aleph. Let's see what happens with this lottery that they run. Vayomer Shaul al Hashem Elokei Yisrael, Hava Samim. Shaul says to Hashem, God of Israel, Hava Samim. For those who sing the song Kol Mekadesh Shvi on Friday night, you're familiar with the words from there, but the words are not from there, the words are from here. Hava Samim, literally, give the innocent. Give the innocent. Is that how your text is translated?
Give a flawless verdict.
Give a flawless verdict, right? Because you're not really asking to give the innocent, you're asking to give the guilty. So give a perfect verdict. Okay, we're going to come back to that because that's not how everybody's going to take it, but we'll see that. And sure enough, Shaul and Yonatan are the ones who are found to, who are ensnared by this, and everybody else is free. There's the word. Shaul says, cast it between me and Yonatan, my son. And
it's the word
Yilachid,
captured.
Yes.
How does that work?
Right. So there's some question about the mechanics of how these lotteries work. Going back to the story with Achan. And the idea may be that it's not a lottery as we think of it, but actually actually the way it's done is you have everybody pass in front of, or the representatives pass in front of the Urim Betumim, and whoever is the one is caught, is unable to move. And that could be what Vayilachet means, or Vayilachet is just a turn of phrase to mean he gets caught.
And this is all of the leaders?
These are representatives. Yeah. You work with representatives. You're not going to have millions of people walk in front of it. Yeah. So take a look at, and it also, the other piece of it is that he's separated. If we're really just having everybody walk in front, then you wouldn't need to have the nation on one side and Shaul and Hassan on the other side. You would just have everybody walk. So clearly there is some kind of pooling of one side versus the other, which is easier to do if you're doing those a lottery. Here's a piece of paper for this group, here's a piece of paper for this group, and let's see which one comes up. As opposed to these. But again, to make a point.
But then the lottery also depends on Hashem's involvement in this. Otherwise,
yes.
Something's bothering me here. For example, Shaul is not innocent either in this whole game. He's the one who did the korban before Shmuel came. That was a chet to Hashem. This was his father's oath.
No one knows anything yet.
A lesser kind
of. No one knows what's happened yet. Are you asking a question about the lottery or about why Yonatan is going to get in trouble?
Yeah.
So we're not there yet. Hold your question, please.
No, I'm just saying that Shaul was equally more guilty, I think, of an offense than Yonatan in this
case. Hold the question. We're not on that. I really need to go piece by piece here, or we will literally never get through this. Vayomer Shaul al Yonatan. Shaul says to Yonatan, Hagida li me'asisa, tell me what you have done. Vagilo Yonatan, and Yonatan says to him, Vayomer ta'om ta'amti b'kisei ha'mata asher bi'adi me'at devash hineni amut. Yonatan says, I tasted with the edge of the staff a little bit of honey, so you think he's about to say, no big deal.
And he says, I'm ready to die.
And he says, ready to die for it. It's really striking. What's especially striking is what Malbim says. Take a look at source number 3. Malbim notes, Yonatan b'tzidkato lo amar hitnatzlut she'amar. Yonatan, as somebody who is righteous, doesn't give his justification that he gave earlier. Meaning, when the guy said to him, hey, what are you doing? Don't you know there's an oath? He said, that's a terrible idea. Why in the world did my father do that? He doesn't say that now. I mean, he's in front of his father now. He doesn't do that. But Malvin says he doesn't do it. Achar shera asha goral Allah Allah ki chata, because he says, look, God is saying I sinned. So all of my excuses at this point are irrelevant.
But this is pretty good. But he will say no then. Asking him, what did you do?
Unless he wants to make a show.
Ask him to confess.
He really can explain almost everything either way.
Yes, that is correct. Everything. You could read it either way.
But also death seems to be a very harsh punishment.
We'll get there. We are going to get there, really.
It's just like all of a sudden it hit me as I'm reading this pasuk, because I was very, I'm sure everybody here was very disturbed by Yonatan's reaction. It was very un-Yonatan-like, his reaction in the field when it happened.
How do you know it's un-Yonatan-like?
It just just from things that we know about Yonatan.
What do we know about Yonatan that makes it un-Yonatan-like? What do you know about Yonatan? I'm asking this not to be difficult, but because we make assumptions that aren't necessarily accurate, either based on what we think someone ought to be, or based on potentially psukim from later on and stories from later on. Yonatan to this point.
Well, no, I'm talking about later on. Okay. I'm not talking about. We all have a little bit of a knowledge, and it just all of a sudden hit me that perhaps like there could be a good explanation for what he did in the field, which was when he suddenly realized what was going on. He didn't want the nation to be afraid, and it could be that he was minimizing it in front of the nation, so that they wouldn't be afraid at this point in the middle of the battle.
Oh, that's an issue.
But then, I don't know.
Don't you think then they would have been like, well, he did it, so we can do it?
Yeah, that makes things worse.
Right? He won't kill his son for it. Let's go eat some too.
Right.
Being facetious? Is that what you're saying? You're just being facetious?
No.
I'm saying if he's minimizing it, and like, oh, it's no big deal,
And then the other people are like, okay, it's not a big deal. I was going to do it too.
There was a danger.
And then that could, like,
either way, at this point, he's not offering any justifications. No. He's not minimizing it. Whatever his reaction originally was, which we will come back to, at this stage, he is accepting death. And Shaul, for his part, is on board. Pasuk Mem Dalet, Vayomer Shaul, and so said Shaul, Ko Yaseh Elokim V'chol Yosef, Kimos Tamus Yonasan. So may God do, for you shall die, Yonatan. This is a language of a curse, the commentators say. It's not even taking an oath, which is good, because if it's an oath, he's stuck. It's a curse. So the question we're going to pause with here and address before we go further to see the nation's reaction is, why is Shaul so harsh? We know the reasons for Yonatan to be found innocent. We don't know what Shaul knows, and keep that in mind. Number one, we say to ourselves, I mean, Shaul made this up. Why does it have to carry a death sentence? Number two, he didn't know, right? Number three, I mean, are you really going to kill anybody, over this? I mean, he had a little bit of... So... what we're going to see here is two tracks within the way to look at Shaul's verdict. And also, when we get to the nation's response, and I charted for you a number four on the sheet just to make sure that we're clear, both in the conviction of Yonatan and then in the redemption of Yonatan by the nation, one school of thought is going to be that Shaul says he is guilty, by justice he should be killed. And the nation is going to say, no, he's actually innocent. The other approach is, Shaul is not going to say he's guilty, but Shaul is going to say he should die anyway. Despite not being guilty, there are reasons why he should die, and the nation is going to say that even within this sort of meta view, as we'll see, that says he should die, that's not justified, he should not die. You'll see what I mean as we go through it. I'll explain as I go through it. But first of all, within the view that it's justice here, Ralbag makes the point in source number 5. When he gives you the lessons learned from this section, he says that should be the seventh lesson is Lahudia ki hashalit al hamishpat v'hu hamelech ro'oi shelo yisa panim l'shom adam. The person in charge of justice, the king in our case, should not show favor to anyone. Ad sheyomar lebanav shelo yidam. Even saying he doesn't know his own children. This is the job of being a king and being in charge of justice. Now, the problem that you're going to have here is that he was ignorant of the oath, right? Which we've pointed out. Ramban, first of all, just because people asked, why is there a death penalty at all? So take a look at source number 7. Ramban, back in Chumash, actually number 6 first, sorry. That's the pasuk he's commenting on. The pasuk that we're reading here is in B'chukosai, the end of Sefer Vayikra. Kocherem asher yochoram min ha'adam lo yipada, mos yumas. Any cherem which is declared from people shall not be redeemed. He shall surely die. I don't know what that sentence means. So Ramban comes along to explain it. And what he says is, a cherem is a decree. So cherem asher yochoram is a decree which is decreed from people. Lo yipadeh, there is no ransoming it, there is no redeeming it. If that's the decision that's made, it shall be followed. And mos yumas, the penalty is death. So look at Ramban. He says, min hakasav hazeh, I see the time, so I'm going to read my English translation and skip the Hebrew. From this text emerged to them the following law. That any Jewish king or great Sanhedrin, before the gathering of all Israel, who has the legal authority, if they decree to battle a city, or if they issue a cheirim for something, one who violates it is liable for death. And that's why Yavesh Gilad, who did not participate in the war, again, in the story of Pilagish B'Givah, as well as Yehonatan here, were liable. He says, why otherwise would there be a death penalty? It must be because this is violation of a royal decree. But wait a minute, he is innocent because he didn't know, right? Like people have been asking. So one answer is that Shaul doesn't know that Yonatan was unaware. Remember, Yonatan didn't say that. Yonatan just said, yeah, I ate. That's enough. And that's one point, is that Shaul is unaware. However, Ralbag comes back to what I said to Leona before. Take a look at source number 8. Again, I'm reading my English translation. Yonatan took it the honey, because he had not heard the oath. And yet it was considered a crime, as we will see, for two reasons. One, because he did not investigate earlier, seeing that no one from the nation touched his hand to his mouth. This wouldn't happen other than due to a vow or agreement. Like, why else is nobody eating anything? I mean, it doesn't dawn on you that there's something going on here. Pause in Ralbag. I'm not ready for the second half of Ralbag yet. But that's if this is justice. If what Shaul is doing is saying he broke the law and this is the penalty. Number one, the penalty is death because it is a cherem, and Ramban has told us that that's what the pasuk is referring to when it says most you must. There's a penalty of death for breaking the cherem. And if you'll say, but he's innocent, the answer is, I'm all right, thanks. And if you'll say he's innocent because he didn't know, no one, Shaul, had not been given that information, at least that we can see. But number two, even if he has, how ignorant are you when you didn't see anything? I mean, you didn't notice? I mean, to a certain extent, you'd say, like, what's wrong with this man? That he is out there with the troops, he's clearly a leader among them, and he doesn't notice that the people aren't eating anything.
It's a lot easier to notice something than to notice something that isn't.
Yeah, understood. The other school of thought, though, is to say that this is beyond justice. Yes. It's not about a death penalty for a crime that warrants it. But rather, it's the theme that I've already mentioned, that Shaul wants to demonstrate that the oversights of the era of Eli and the era of Shmuel are over. Chafni and Pinchas getting their way with the Mishkan is gone. Shmuel's sons abusing their power as judges in whatever way they did, that wasn't clear. That's done.
At the expense of his
son. At the expense of his son. But hang on, let me just finish. Let me just finish the story first. Number one, again, his son took those sweets, which I think does play a role here, but take a look at the other half of Ralbag. It's not just that. It's Yonatan's response when they tell him about the oath. Right? Because he mocked his father for this oath, despite knowing that they didn't defeat the Plishtim via strength. It was only from God. Meaning, not only does he react harshly to it, but the whole victory is from God. It's not because the people are strong. And if so, whether they fasted or didn't fast doesn't affect their success. Now, the truth of the matter is, you could debate that point, because the truth is that even though we believe this, nonetheless, you're supposed to field the strongest army you can. You still use strategy. It's not as though you throw caution to the wind and do whatever you like. That's true. Nonetheless, it helps make the fast make more sense. Remember, we gave two reasons for fasting. One reason was that they'd pursue the battle and not get distracted. But the other reason was kapara, for atonement. Right? If this whole thing is from God, then having them fast actually makes a lot of sense. And this is what he mocked when he said, what are you doing? How could you do that? It's going to make them weak and they're not going to fight well, and they could have done much better if only they had eaten. Sorry, Yonatan. At this point, now that you've done that, now that you've set yourself in opposition to the king on this oath, you're not leaving him with a whole lot of choice. He's going to have to carry this out. Not because you deserve it under a death penalty, you didn't know, but because as a meta principle, you've now set yourself up in opposition.
No, I agree with that.
Okay.
I don't agree that... I just think that the people should have been allowed to... that harsher judgment on it. That's all.
Okay.
Which time? The first time or this time?
Now. Once he said it, right. I mean, you have to follow through. But I don't think it should have been said before.
Or even if you want to negate the things that Eli did wrong and everyone else did wrong with their sons, it doesn't have to be kill them. It could be you are no longer the leader, in part of the army or the successor to the throne.
I don't think we can second guess.
No,
well, you actually can second guess Shaul, because the nation does. The nation is about to second guess him, and the nation is about to win. So you can second guess.
But also, the term, we're talking a lot here about justice. And there's justice and then there's mercy, which is another thing. And it could be that both Yonatan and Shaul are saying,
we are, you know, I am prepared to die. I am prepared for my son to die. That's what Hashem decrees, in order that that it be better for the nation, but still hoping that Hashem will grant mercy.
So the answer to that is not necessarily. And the reason I say not necessarily is that if this is, in fact, justice being carried out, there is no place for a human court to apply mercy.
No, only from
the and Hashem is not going to even speak here.
Right.
It's going to be the people and Shaul who are speaking. So what we're going to have to see next time is the nation is indeed going to succeed in getting Yonatan exempt from this punishment. And the question is going to be, what argument did they make? How is it that they defeated that? And it's going to depend again on, was this justice or was this beyond justice? That will determine what it was that they were saying in response. There's a lot to talk about with this, God willing, next week. Plus, if we take the view that Yonatan is really innocent and it's not justice at all here, then you have to come back and ask the question, so why didn't God respond to the question about the war?
Right.
And we're going to have answers to that as well. So there's an awful lot that we still have to talk about. Thank you very much.